couple of minutes early, but I think we're right. Good evening, everyone. My name is Jo Westwood. I'm the Acting Mayor of Kingborough tonight, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday, the 20th of June 2022. Welcome to those watching the live stream from home via YouTube. We have no one in our public gallery this evening, so you're all tucked up at home watching online. It's 5:30 p.m. and now I officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that Council's meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. And in accordance with Council's policy, I will ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced. Okay. Thank you, General Manager. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land and pay respect to Elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees tonight, we have myself, Acting Mayor, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, and Councillor Wass, and I'm advised that Councillor Midgley should be joining us shortly. From our staff, we have our General Manager, Mr Arnold, our Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, our Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, our Manager of Development Services, Ms. Tasha Tyler-Moore, our Planner, Ms. McNeil, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. Apologies tonight. We have apologies from our Mayor, Councillor Reet, Councillor Street, and I understand we also have an apology from Councillor Grace. Confirmation of minutes. Do I have a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of council held on the 10th of meeting number 10 held on the 6th of June and the special council meeting held on the 14th of June be confirmed as a true and correct record? Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Bastone. And just for the record, Councillor Midgley has joined us. Welcome, Councillor Midgley. All those in favour that the minutes are true and correct, please say aye. Those against? Thank you. The minutes are confirmed. We have had no workshops held since the last council meeting. That brings us to declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest that they would like to declare at this stage of the meeting? Councillor Midgley.
Oh, sorry, no.
No? That's fine. Transfer of agenda items. Are there any items on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session? No. That brings us to questions without notice from the public. We don't have any questions at this stage that I'm aware of. If you would like to put a question on notice, of course, you're very welcome to do that. The best way to do that is to send your question via email to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. So questions on notice from the public that we have received for this council meeting. Starting at page 2, we have a question about sports club hire fees from Mr Adam Smee, with a response from our recreation officer, Mrs Sprott. We have a question on sports ground user fees from Mr Casper Dean, and an officer's response on page 3 and page 4. We have a question regarding Osborne Esplanade upgrade from Mr Tong, and a response from Mr Reeve on page 4. We have a question from Mr Tong regarding Browns River Bridge, and an officer's response to that on page 4. That moves us, takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have a question without notice? Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have several questions, I'm sorry. The first one is, why has it taken so long to approve the construction of a deck at the Taroona Hall? During this lengthy delay, costs have risen by 30%. So I'm wondering if I can perhaps direct it to have someone in planning, perhaps? Or
Would that be planning, or would that be Mr. Reeve? No. Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Mayor, I need to take the question on notice so that I can look up the details of the application.
Thank you very much. My next question is, having acquired the wheelhouse from the Mirambina, the Bruni community would like to install it at a lona near the toilet block looking out onto the channel. Are there any regulations that would prohibit it being open to the public?
Ms. Tyler Moore, sounds like another one for you.
Sorry, Mayor, could I just have the start of the question repeated?
Yes, I don't really think it's a planning matter, but having acquired the wheelhouse from the Mirambina, the Bruni community would like to have it installed at a lona near the toilet block looking out onto the channel. That would be a planning matter, but their question is, are there any regulations that would prohibit it being open to the public?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'd have to take that on notice, Councillor Bastone, and find out whether there were any restrictions under any legislation that I'm not accustomed to.
Okay, thank you. My next question is, what planning approval is needed to construct a bus shelter on the northwest corner of Nichols Rivulet Road and the Channel Highway where the school buses stop to pick up students? It's a safety issue, very difficult to see in the dark, and the students sort of stand there on the bottom of a 90 kilometre an hour stretch. There's money being raised by the Kettering Hotel to build the shelter, but I'm wondering what planning approval will be needed and how long such planning approval might take.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, there are a number of exemptions related to bus shelters, but we'd need to know the property specifically to see if there's any overlay controls that overrule those exemptions for bus shelters. Generally, the decision making around bus shelters is done by the Department of Transport, or DSG, and council, but not necessarily the planning department. So if I get the address from this, I could take it on notice to see if there's any planning permit triggers for a bus shelter.
Thank you very much. And my next one is through you, Acting Mayor, to Mr. Reeve. Harvey Road Alona was to have been started this financial year, and with only 2 weeks to go of this financial year, I'm wondering when it will actually be started.
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, so that project's currently out to tender at the moment, so we expect the tender prices to come back sometime in July, I'd imagine. So I'd expect to start on that a little bit further after that. By the way, it's a split project, so it goes over financial years, so part of the allocation was this financial year and part of the allocation was next financial year, so it was always intended to bridge across financial years.
Yes, they're just worried that it'll be next financial year and the financial year after.
No, the design's complete and it's out to tender there, so as long as the costs come back within the range that we're expecting there, we'll be expecting that project to actually go ahead probably sometimes towards the spring area.
Thank you very much. And my last question, which you'll be glad of, I'm sure. The next time that there's community consultation required on budget or other things that would be relating to Bruni Island, could the advertising be done in the Bruni newspaper, please?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we're happy to take that on board, Councillor Bastone, and endeavour to do that. Yes.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question is about fast-tracking electric vehicle charging facilities. In the five-year capital works program just passed, the Civic Centre electric vehicle charge facility is on track for financial year 2026-27. What is Council able to do to progress that faster? And what planning is in train for other council-owned EV charge infrastructure? A second component to this question is, will Council consider putting in EV charging in more residential settings to assist EV owners who are renters or people whose address does not have a carport or garage with access to electricity?
There's some complex questions there. Who should I best direct those to? Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there is a current project to install EV charging facilities in the back car park of the council chambers there. So the other allocation that's sitting in the five-year plan is more tied up with potentially the movement of that particular EV charging station or a new EV charging station, bearing in mind the one that's actually been put in place in the car park is by private hands, if you like. So that's the opportunity later down the track, I guess, for council to actually potentially also have access to that EV charging station, which is their own. In terms of actually putting in other EV charging stations, possibly. It's a bit difficult to actually say at this stage. Clearly, with our own fleet, we're gradually transitioning to EV vehicles. In terms of other EV charging stations around the municipality, there's a few at the moment, but whether or not there's intention for other people to actually look at putting in EV charging stations, it's a bit of an unknown.
Any other questions, Councillor Cordova? No. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I feel like I'm the squeaky wheel on this one, but the Channel Highway Corridor Study, as we're all aware, there is quite a number of actions still impending in regards to this, and one particular that gets raised at almost every Howden Progress Association meeting is the speed limit on the Channel Highway and the consistency regarding this. Seems like an easy fix, but I don't know how many years later it's still ongoing. There's quite a number of other actions from that study as well, and I am aware that we have had a letter from the Minister regarding some of the actions, but I'm just, who else has been the squeaky wheel on this to government to ensure that things are progressing?
So just to clarify your question.
So the question is, there's still a number of outstanding things as part of the Algona Corridor Study, the Margate to Huntingfield. There's still a number of actions that haven't been completed. The study occurred a couple of years ago. I asked these questions at council, but who's, keeping in touch with state growth to ensure that these things are actioned from the study?
Mr. Reeve, have you got something to add in terms of council's advocacy?
Through your acting mayor, I guess it certainly has been raised at council and then it's and further raised with the minister, as you've just mentioned, with its, a reply, I believe. I guess in terms of where that might actually go from here, it's council could resolve to go back to the minister and re-ask the question and actually get some more solid timeframes and so forth. I guess that would be up to council to make that resolution. In terms of at an officer level there, we do keep an eye on these various different studies there. As you're aware, there's some actions out of that particular corridor study which are current or at least being developed in some shape or form. But the other ones there, we do tend to try and liaise with our own counterparts there as to where they may or may not be at. I sort of agree with you in terms of the fact it's actually been around for a little while, that particular project there, and there's definitely with some actions in there which were, not requiring as much, which haven't probably been actioned as much. So quite happy to, once again, have that discussion with my counterpart in DSG, or if council wishes, they can, renew their application to the minister.
Thank you. I think there has been a change of minister, so perhaps it's gone amiss. I've got a couple of questions. So the next one's regarding the Drew Point playground. I have asked questions regarding this before. When are works commencing? I understand that there's been a lot of community discussion around the love of a skate park in that location. I don't know if that was part of the master plan. What's happening? What are the dates? And what are we telling the community?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we will be going out to the community this week in relation to seeking comment on our plans. They do not include a skate park. I can't give dates and time frames. Once we get community feedback, we will finalise the plan, then we need to go through a tender process, then we need to appoint a contractor. And at the moment, playground equipment has a 20-week lead time in terms of delivery. So, look, we would hope construction would start before the end of this calendar year, but it is a space in which there are a limited number of contractors and, as indicated, long lead times for equipment. So that's rough timeframes, but certainly I discussed with our urban design officer today, and I've been talking to our communications advisor, and there is a commitment to go out this week with the plans.
Great, thank you very much. The next question is regarding the Conyngham Beach toilet block, and I understand councillors were all copied into an email from Kowska regarding that the old toilet block has been demolished and that there is a wish or a preferred option from Kowska for a dinghy rack to be installed so that local yachties can put their dinghies there to save the vegetation and things like that. So I'm wondering, because I haven't seen a reply to that email, just wondering what the future of that is.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, Council's NAB coordinator will be meeting on site as requested with the President of Kowska to discuss that matter. But I would emphasise that Council's made no commitment towards providing any funding towards the dinghy rack, and it's previously been a topic that has been discussed over the years in relation to the dinghy racks, and it's something that will assist in terms of preventing the coastal erosion, so it's something that we do support in principle, subject to the ongoing discussions.
Thank you. A question through you, Deputy Mayor, to the General Manager, in regards to wondering if he is aware of the motion that the Deputy Mayor at Waratah Wynyard is putting forward to their council meeting tonight regarding writing to LGAT regarding the review of the Code of Conduct, looking at mandatory police checks and working with vulnerable children checks for all councillors, and a review of the Code of Conduct process. I'm wondering, is General Manager aware of any motions that have been forward by this council previously? And I'd personally like to put this a similar motion to our council at the next council meeting. And any thoughts to that, please?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, Councillor Minchley, I am aware of the... it's actually one of two interesting motions or notices of motion before Waratah Wynyard Council this evening. Their meeting starts in just over 10 minutes. The one you refer to has six parts to it. The two major components of it are to seek through LGAT to the state government, to seek from the state government the introduction of some mandatory requirements for potential candidates for the 2022 council elections in this state, to hold the two of the three things that were just mentioned by Councillor Midgley, effectively a police check, and to make it public any criminal record, and I think that relates to the second notice of motion by another councillor tonight at that meeting. But in terms of the Code of Conduct, this council has previously expressed its concern with the current Code of Conduct process. The notice of motion before Waratah Wynyard tonight would seek that there would be the introduction of the ability for the minister through the state government to suspend an individual councillor who might have been found guilty of a breach of the Local Government Act or the Code of Conduct moving forward. They're the essence of that particular notice of motion.
Thank you. And one further question. In relation to an item in the appendix there, the Settlers Park Cemetery, the significant tree left as a stag. I note I've had a few residents comment regarding that, so it's great to note why it was left in regards to that. But I'm just wondering, did I miss any comms in regards to this through the Chronicle or on our Facebook page?
I don't recall any. No.
Through your acting mayor, we'll take that on notice. So I don't recall any.
The reason why I asked, I just thought it would be good for the community to note that one.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone?
I'm sorry, I just, through you, Mayor, I'd like to ask Mr Smee, after his alarming statistics on how long it takes to get playground equipment at the moment, has the playground equipment been ordered for Silverwater Park yet?
Through you, Acting Mayor, no, it hasn't. I think as I indicated last meeting, we've had to re-scope the design. The previous design that was done by our previous urban design officer, when we costed it, came out at $1 million, and we've got a budget of $250,000. So our new urban design officer is working towards a budget, but we've yet to order the equipment.
Thank you. If there's no further questions without notice from councillors, we'll move on to questions on notice from councillors. These start on page 5 of the agenda paper. We have a question from Councillor Woss regarding the steps onto Kingston Beach with a response from the Manager of Works. We have a question from Councillor Gladewright regarding fire bunkers with a response from staff on pages 5 and 6. And we have a question from Councillor Cordova regarding headworks charges and developer contributions on page 7 with a response from Council's strategic planner. And then we have a question from Councillor Cordova regarding tree valuations with a response from staff on pages 8 and 9. So with that, the open session of council adjourns and we move into sitting as a planning authority. The planning authority commences at 5:50 p.m. So we have an officer's report to the planning authority on page 10 regarding DA 2021708 development application for 13 farm sheds for vegetable production and management of vegetation at 371 Narina Road, Margate. Do I have a mover and a seconder? Moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. The proposal is for the establishment of structures for the purpose of mushroom and hydroponic vegetable production with the intention of harvesting climate-controlled food all year round. A total of 13 shipping containers are to be repurposed and used. The recommendation is for approval with conditions. There were 6 submissions and I feel satisfied that the concerns raised by the submissions have all been addressed. These include 3 timber vertical screens, certified noise barriers must be constructed. There's also a condition about the maximum level of noise required at any given time. Hours of operation have been specified, etc. I do have a question, though, about condition 15. It's referring to the reversing beeper on the forklifts. Is it legal for us to ask that reversing beeper is not used? Because I thought this was a safety requirement.
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, there's alternatives to the beepers. It's a different type of sound and it's recommended through the noise report. We have had it on other sites as well.
Ah. So what is the sound if it's not a beep?
Through you, Mayor, off the top of my head, I can't actually remember what it is, but it's not a high-pitched beep.
Right.
I would have to look at the report to see what the alternative is. But okay. Obviously safety is still paramount.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Further speakers? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. And I have a longer contribution, and so I will just start to avoid bearing the lead, I'll just start by saying why I diverge in my opinion from the officer's response on this occasion, and then I will explain why. Indeed, the concerns raised by the community, and indeed there were many, have been addressed in the report, but unfortunately not to my satisfaction, and I'd implore other councillors to consider their position on this one carefully. The reason I diverge is that, in my opinion, this proposal fails to meet the performance criteria and therefore fails to meet the planning scheme with the following. 13.3.1, hours of operation, and I'll go into that. 13.4.3A1C, design, location of buildings requires clearing of native vegetation. 13.4.3A2, the exterior building surfaces colour have a reflectance value greater than 40%, and visually they in no way fit into the surrounding landscape. 13.4.3A3, combined gross floor area exceeds 375 square metres and outbuildings exceed 100 square metres. And 13.4.5A1B, storage is easily visible from public view. So those are my reasons, and now let's go into it. What we're looking at here is basically an 8.2-acre property across two titles, and it's surrounded by, it's set among other properties 5 and 6 acres apiece. The site and the surrounding area is zoned rural living. So the main purposes within rural living are to provide for residential use or development on large lots in a rural setting, to provide for compatible use and development that does not adversely impact on residential amenity, to provide for agricultural uses that do not adversely impact on residential amenity, to avoid land use conflict with adjacent rural resource or significant agricultural zoned land by providing buffer areas. So that is to say that this is not primarily agricultural use. It's basically to provide a buffer between the town, let's say, and the agricultural use, because we all recognise, as the report does, that a farm is not a 9-to-5 operation and that farming noises do take place kind of all hours of the day. And then finally, to provide for use and development that respects the natural landscape. Now, I've been down to this property, and I was actually down there. I walked, not on the property, but I walked up and down the road, and that was yesterday. And what I find interesting is that yesterday, you know, we see a lot in this report about the number of commercial vehicle movements being very few. I think it's 4 commercial vehicle movements twice a week. And down there yesterday, there were no fewer than 6 vehicles on site, 3 small trucks. One of them had the tailgate open, looking like it was kind of unloading. There were people moving around, very much looking like they were engaged in commercial activity. Of course, I speculate, and that's not appropriate. But in the rural living zone, there are plenty of permitted uses that could include commercial businesses and their associated activities, provided the site coverage has a combined gross floor area of buildings not more than 375 square metres. So options for those potential commercial activities or those businesses, you could do educational or occasional care, you could have a church or an art and craft centre or a public hall, domestic animal breeding, boarding or training, natural and cultural values management, gardening or landscaping supplies, visitor accommodation, sports and accommodation, roadside stalls, resource processing only if winery or similar, and I'll get to that later, and sports and recreation. All other uses are prohibited. So I draw everyone's attention to the rural living zone and what that zone is about. As I mentioned, at the site, I can see exactly why those people who made the submissions have concerns about noise, about visual amenity, and about commercial vehicles, because as I was there on a Sunday, which it explicitly says there will be no business activity taking place there on a Sunday, I certainly heard those compressors go on and off, and I can tell that they would go on and off whenever the temperature changes, and you can hear it from the street. For example, zone provisions in clause 13.3.1A1C say non-residential use A1 hours of operation must be within 8 to 6pm Monday to Friday, 9 till midday on Saturdays, and nil on Sundays and public holidays. So we're supposed to essentially believe that, even in the short time that I was looking at that site, and one could hear the droning, one could hear the noise, one could hear that it was definitely out of character for the neighbourhood, and also those structures actually do stick out, and that's why I disagree with the officer's report that says that it doesn't change the visual amenity. It absolutely does. I mean, the light reflectance value, and I realise there'll be a timber screen that's announced here, but I actually just don't buy it. I'm sceptical about that. So we're supposed to believe that with increased activity on the site, even though I saw, you know, three trucks down there on a Sunday in clearly, you know, engaged in commercial activity, we're supposed to believe from the report here that one of those three trucks present on the property is just for show.
Time.
And may I please have 3 more minutes just to sum up?
Yes. The motion is that Councillor Cordova have 3 more minutes. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour? Motion granted. Time granted. Oh, sorry. Those against? We have a division. All those in favour? Councillors Midgley, Glade Wright, Fox, Bastone and Westwood. And those against? Councillor Wass. The extra 3 minutes are granted.
Thank you. So, Acting Mayor, whilst I realise that the report does make some claims about the level of activity being reasonable for the area, I actually just I respectfully disagree with those claims because of my own eyes and because of my own ears, because of what I saw, and because of the general state of the property, one can see that I can understand why the representors have made their representations. There are things within this proposal that I don't think match up to what is actually taking place there. And though it's, you know, not exactly one of the performance criteria, I've laid out the performance criteria that I believe this fails in its assessment of. But in addition to that, I can understand those views expressed in the representations because of the general state of the property and the significant amount of plastic waste, for example, that's quite clear on site, the apparent state of disrepair of the blueberry nets. That, of course, might draw concern from neighbours about how well this site can be maintained. And the fact that we're looking here in this report at retrospective approval being sought for the removal of native vegetation, including 2 eucalyptus obliqua trees of high conservation value, it further adds to this concern that this particular property has been behaving in a way that's a bit of a do it first and ask for forgiveness later kind of approach. Now, fundamentally, this is a rural living area. When we look at the retrospective request for removal of those trees, as the report notes on page 16, mitigating bushfire risk to an agricultural enterprise does not necessarily require vegetation clearing. So there's another example of where I think that this particular proposal just hasn't met the planning scheme and in many ways has tried to find workarounds that I don't believe are appropriate. I also think it's worth noting on page 4, the officer acknowledges that the rural living zone purpose statements say that the proposal complies with the statements and objectives as it provides for agricultural use that does not adversely impact on residential amenity. And again, I take a different view. I think it does negatively impact because of the way it looks, because of the way it sounds, and because of the commercial activity that's going on there that doesn't fit in. In conclusion, the proposal compromises visual amenity and has an adverse impact on neighbours. In contravention of 13.4.3 P2, the building size is too big, in contravention of 13.4.3 P3, and it is not consistent with the domestic scale of the dwellings on site or in close visual proximity. And so I disagree with the assessment on page 18 that the design acceptable solution is considered and that there's no unreasonable impact on the landscape, when in fact, having seen it, I think that there is. Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Do we have any other councillors? Councillor Bastone to speak?
I'd just like to ask a couple of questions. The council has issued an infringement notice on the property in July 2021 in relation to undertaking the use that's contrary to state policy or a planning scheme. Now, was this because they were selling mushrooms on the site at that time? Or was it because they built them without a planning permit? Or what was the reason that we put the infringement notice on the property? And did they have to pay a fine? Or what happens now?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I believe it was a notice of intention that went in that said that they needed to rectify the application, and it was issued because of the vegetation removal and the buildings that were on site. And I would have to look in the file to see if there was a monetary infringement included in that as well.
Right. And my other concern, my main concern, is the colour white of the buildings. When it said, all right, they need it to keep the temperature down, the way we are so pedantic on any homes that are built, it's in all our planning schemes that we don't have reflective value, and yet here's someone going to be building something or putting something in an area which is going to be visually very unattractive, and even if there is a timber screening part, you're still going to see these white buildings. Now, if we're going to allow someone to build these for commercial reasons, I think we have to be fairly consistent and allow people to do the same with their own homes, to put white roofs on them or to have them white so that they are not as hot as they would be otherwise. So I can't see why the exception is being given to these people who will then just get away with something very visually unattractive. All right.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. A question in regards to why the applicant perhaps didn't seek approvals and go through the proper planning process initially. Perhaps the shipping containers sometimes seem to be a bit variable in regards to getting permits and things like that, but if we could please have an explanation in regards to that.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the intention of the applicant of why they did or didn't get approvals, I'm not going to speculate on in the council meeting, and it's probably not applicable to the decision making. With respect to shipping containers, there is some confusion in the community. So under the Building Act, you don't need a building permit for a shipping container. Under the Planning Approval or Land Use and Planning Approvals Act, you may and likely to need permits for shipping containers. They are considered outbuildings with respect to the planning controls, so if there's a discretion triggered, whether it be the colour, the setback, the distance, vegetation removal, that triggers the need for those outbuildings to need a planning permit.
Thank you, and thanks for that clarification in my question. In regards to, as noted by Councillor Cordova and Councillor Bastone, the view of the dwellings from the road and the surrounding area and the visual impact, and noting while the proposed buildings are not hidden from view and will form a new element in the landscape that is not considered to be unreasonable, because there is concern around that being unreasonable, especially in that rural setting, can I just have some more explanation in regards to why they are not considered to be unreasonable?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the officer's report includes justification as to why they think it's not unreasonable, including that it's clustered near other buildings and other structures are on site that are visible, so that it's contained within the same area. The planning permit includes the requirement for the screening and vegetation to be planted, to be natural vegetation, natural screening for the buildings as well. They're the reasons that have been put forward by the officer.
Thank you. And in regards to, sorry, I just need to familiarise myself again, when does the actual screening and the vegetation need to occur? And again, it's that follow-up thing in regards to that actually occurring.
Ms. Tyler
Moore. What have we put in that? Sorry, I need to find.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the timing is included in the conditions of the permit.
Sorry, what number is that?
Which I'm just scrolling down to. So starting from page 29 of the planning permit conditions, and so condition 5, prior to the construction of the proposed timber screening and landscaping plan must be provided, and the vertical timber screening associated landscaping in accordance with the endorsed plan must be constructed within 3 months of the date of this permit. So quite often planning permits usually just say prior to the commencement of buildings and works or prior to the use, but because this is a retrospective approval, we've included a time frame in there to ensure it's done, because effectively they've already acted on the permit, and that's why it's got that 3 month time period in there. There's also a requirement about the driveway as well within 3 months and the parking spaces. So it's all within that 3 month period, and then within 6 months they must provide a acoustic report about those noise effects.
And so if the noise effects are still somewhat disturbing, I guess, to local surrounding neighbours, and just in relation to noise as well, if the local neighbourhood or visitors to the area deem that the hours of operation fall with outside what's allowed in this permit and I guess the bylaw. What happens there?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the noise assessment must just be within, shows that it's within those decibels that are indicated in Condition 14. If they're not within that, then the applicant is in breach of the requirements. In the event that Council got complaints that they believed that it wasn't within those decibels, we would first investigate as best we can without having to seek a professional assessment, and then we can get a professional assessment done, independent one, which would be at our cost, which we have done on other sites where we've had complaints of noise. And with respect to the hours of operation, if residents believe they're not complying with their planning permit, they would need to contact Council. And we do appreciate them being eyes and ears for development that occurs on sites, and we would undertake enforcement action if we deemed that there was a breach of the planning permit.
Thank you. And a note, a question regarding the comment that Councillor Cordova made. I can't find it, sorry. I did read through the recommendations and the points there, but just in regards to the waste, so the plastic waste, I'm sure there's a, for any business, there'd be a point regarding waste removal. I know there's 22, the quantity of hazardous chemicals. Does that fall under the planning permit?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there's nothing about specific about waste or plastics that are generated by the business. It's not controlled under planning. The second part you asked was the...
That was it. No, just wondering if that fell under planning. I didn't think it did, but...
Second thing you asked did fall under planning, but I can't remember what you just said.
Oh, sorry, no, just hazardous. Noting. Yeah, no, there was just noting that there is something regarding hazardous chemicals on point 22.
Couldn't
see anything generally about waste.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the hazardous chemicals is to do with manifest quantities, which are hazardous on site and relate to bushfire. So we make sure that, because if they go over the manifest quantities for certain chemicals, then it triggers certain requirements under bushfire.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Just with a question. Thank you, Acting Mayor. So I do note this is referring further to Councillor Midgley's point. It's in Clause 21 of the recommendation. It says the premises are to be kept in a neat and tidy condition at all times. My question is, with enforcement of both... My question is about the subjectivity of neat and tidy. You know, I made the claim that I think it's not neat and tidy, which probably contributes to that, to the reason why neighbours aren't really enjoying this process. So my question is, how do we enforce neat and tidy, but what does neat and tidy look like, and how we do? Can we stop the operations of this thing if it's not neat and tidy?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Sorry, smiling because it's making me think of a Mr. Messy book. This specifically talks about neat and tidy. It is ambiguous what neat and tidy it is. There's no quantitative assessment about what neat and tidy is. It would be up to council's assessment of whether it was. We need to do a risk assessment and a fairness assessment as to whether we do enforcement on certain conditions or certain breaches of the planning scheme. So it's not appropriate for us, or we've determined it's not appropriate for us to throw the book at everyone for every indiscretion that occurs. So we would need to consider that and what actions we would take. I would suggest it's probably not appropriate to take them to the magistrates' court in the first instance for not being neat and tidy. So we would need to work with the applicant about, or the property owner, about how they're dealing with that. And we do our best to try and work with people in the community to try and get the better outcomes and to get them tidied up. We have got examples of other sites of the municipality where we've approached them about these issues, and it has been successful rather than throwing the book or going straight to the magistrate's court, which isn't really in the interest of our appropriate expenditure of monies available to us to do enforcement.
Thank you. And just another question, this time about noise and specifically regarding the noise assessments that have been done. When I was down there yesterday, except for the occasional rooster or noise of a goose, these things were by far the noisiest thing in the general area, and that was from the street, and they were switching on and switching off. Now, it's said that conservatively they've done the estimate of the noise by accumulating the sound of all of them all together, but the issue here is that all 13 of them will be going on and off at different times. So if one of them drops beneath 17 and goes to 16, it switches on, and I heard it as I walked past, and it's kind of this low, incessant noise, and then that kind of jigs up louder. And it's, as I say, it's the noisiest thing on that street and in that area. So if somebody hears that it's in breach of the permit, is it a three strikes, you're out kind of policy? At what point does council require them to cease their operations if they're in breach? Because, you know, I guess the allegations that are being made is that they're in breach if they're operating on a Sunday, and those noises are going on all the time. So can you walk us through what actually happens to make the noise stop? Because I think that's the concern, is that the noise will never stop.
I think that's covered by Condition 14, but Ms Tyler Moore, you might like to add to that?
Through you, Acting Mayor, it's much the same as the answer I just gave previously about that we would try and work with them to try and get the noise under control to satisfy the planning permit requirement. If they satisfy the planning permit requirement and have evidence to that, then there's not a lot that we can do. If it's satisfied, it may be that there is something... This is a whole range of scenarios, so it might be that there's something faulty that they have with it, or they've put a different mechanism in there that changes the sound, and if that was the case, then they would need to rectify that to bring it back down. It's not as simple as three strikes and you're out. We would work with them, but we obviously not going to allow 20 times do it again. It needs to be determined, each application on its own merits and the breaches on its own merits, about the appropriate actions to deal with those nuisances or breaches of the planning permit. So it's difficult to be specific about what it is, because as an example, you might have a breach, but it's 1 decibel over. It's quite different from if it's 50 decibels over, which obviously would be extraordinary. But it really comes down to what it is. But our interest really is to protect the amenity of the residents, so long as it's complying with the requirements of the planning scheme.
Thank you. So just one more on that. So specifically with the issue of Sundays and public holidays, are there precedents set where, within this municipality, where air-conditioned units, for example, are ordered to be switched off so that the noise doesn't breach on Sundays and public holidays?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, none that come to mind. Quite often air conditioning units and the like are not dealt with under planning. They're dealt with by the Environmental Health Officers because it's a nuisance under the EPA regulations. So specific to planning permits, there probably are not very many examples that we have, but there are other noise restrictions and times, such as the Bruny Island Ferry had those sorts of restrictions as well, so we would need to monitor and consider any breaches.
And final question on that is just about the timber structure itself doesn't do anything for noise mitigation. Was it considered as part of this proposal to find an acoustic barrier to actually deal with that noise issue?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there are requirements about acoustic barriers that were recommended by the sound engineer that have been included as part of the application, so there is acoustic treatment included.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley, did you have a further question?
Just again, not to harp on and keep talking about the... it is very important, though, living in a rural area, I understand any noise is very... you know, you can really tune into it when you aren't used to having noise when you live in a rural area. So it is good to keep asking questions regarding this. So the noise and the neat and tidy, I would have hoped that planning staff would have visited the site and actually had that conversation with the applicant, so they were fully aware of what they wanted to do, so that we didn't have someone walking there on a Sunday having to hear that and see that. Like, I'd hoped it would have been sorted. And why was it not sorted? Or is this part of sort of sorting it and making sure that they adhere to the requirements?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through Acting Mayor, the permit hasn't been issued yet, so we can't enforce the permit until it's issued. You could potentially do enforcement on them as it further breaches, but they are moving towards compliance by getting the planning permit. So once it's in place, we can undertake enforcement.
Thank you. Councillor Glade-Wright.
Just to clarify, the noise barriers, they haven't been constructed yet, have they?
Ms Tyler Moore, I don't believe they have. Is that correct?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, no, they haven't.
So any experience that a councillor may have had by walking by at this point is irrelevant because these 23 conditions haven't been applied yet?
Ms Tyler Moore?
Through you, Mayor, I make no comment about whether it's relevant or not, but it is likely to be different once they're built.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Glade-Wright. I am comfortable that the 23 conditions attached to this development application will help to mitigate some of the concerns raised by Councillor Cordova. I haven't visited the premises myself in person, but I am comfortable that the conditions are extensive, and I think that, assuming they are abided by going forwards, if this is approved tonight, that it will hopefully mitigate some of those concerns that have been raised. I had a question in relation to condition four, the offset of the two trees, the financial contribution. It mentions that that contribution must be paid into Council's Environmental Management Fund to be used to manage and conserve hollow dwelling habitat in the vicinity of Margate. I just wanted to clarify whether that was what we normally do in terms of specifying the area of our municipality where those funds should be spent. Ms Tyler Moore, if you're able to clarify that, please.
No, we wouldn't normally be so specific. And I don't have the answer as to why it was written specifically from this. Perhaps it's just suggesting that that is something that was lost, that it should be considered when we go to spend the funding. But that's not a definitive answer, but that's what I suggest is intended there.
Okay, thank you. Then there was one other thing just mentioned in the report in regards to the infringement that was issued. It says on page 13, Council issued an infringement notice on the property in July 2021 in relation to the undertaking of a use that is contrary to a state policy or a planning scheme. And then just below that, the assessment states that the proposal is consistent with the outcomes of the state policies and consistent with the objectives of Schedule 1 of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act. That seems to say two different things to me, but am I missing something in relation to that?
The reference to the enforcement notice was that it was in breach because it didn't have a planning permit in place, and that's why it hasn't met it. And the latter assessment that you refer to is doing the assessment of the application because they have now lodged it and asking for approval.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense to me now. So if there are no further contributions from councillors, I will ask whether the mover, Councillor Glade-Wright, would like to sum up.
Just to say, like, I really hear what those six submissions had to say, but I'm pretty confident that the conditions that are attached to this development application will meet those concerns.
Thank you, Councillor Glade-Wright. So we have before us DA 2021 708, moved by Councillor Glade-Wright and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hands. We have Councillors Woss, Midgley, Glade-Wright, Fox and Westwood, and against. We have Councillors Cordova and Bastone. Against, we have Councillors Cordova and Bastone, and the motion is carried. We now move to page 45, which is DA 2021 462, ancillary dwelling at 72 Bullock Drive, Leslie Vale. Do I have a mover and a seconder for this? Moved by Councillor Fox and a seconder, Councillor Woss. Thank you, Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Acting Chair. The proposal for an ancillary dwelling complies with all acceptable zone and code standards under the scheme, and it's not considered that there are any issues raised by representers that haven't been adequately addressed and would prevent council from approving the proposed ancillary dwelling, and therefore I recommend approval with conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Would any other councillor like to make a contribution? Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I'm just trying to wrap my head around G of the advice. It's to do with the covenants. Do we know if this development was a recipient of one of the ancillary dwelling grants?
Ms. Tyler Moore, are you aware of that?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, no, I'm not aware, but it wouldn't be relevant to the decision making anyway.
Could we get a bit of an explanation, please, about G, the covenants? Just the last line, it says it is the owner's responsibility to ensure that none of these covenants are breached to avoid separate private legal action. And the covenant is, which applies, is not to erect on such lot more than one dwelling constructed for a single family. And there's points there about the ancillary dwelling grants, which the purpose of them is to rent them out. So it just seems a little bit vague as to what we're advising.
Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Acting Mayor, the funding that's come from the government about the ancillary dwellings was obviously only written last year or the year before, whenever it was. The covenant was written quite some time ago, so we didn't have any mind for that. Covenants, if they're a covenant between council and the developer, we wholeheartedly uphold the covenant and don't allow the approval because it's a breach. This covenant was put on by the developer, so we make them aware. We try and help out by saying, well, heads up, you've got a covenant on here, and if someone takes you to task about it, you may have an issue. So we try and give them the heads up that they should make sure they're not. However, we still, in our assessment, do a brief assessment, which the officer did within the report, about why we didn't believe it was a breach, because it talks about single dwelling. It's not as specific as saying about renting out and the like. So unfortunately, or fortunately, depends on where you sit, it's not our responsibility to make sure that that hasn't been breached, but we want to give them the heads up that they're taking care to not breach the covenant because they are the landowner, so they're the holder of the title. It's their responsibility to not breach something on their title.
This seems like another discrepancy that someone needs to sort out, but it doesn't sound like that lies with us. Sorry, that's my question.
That's not a question? That's good. That's the end of your contribution. Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
Sorry, I just have a couple of questions. In one place, it's stated that currently the property is used as visitor accommodation. And it says quite clearly visitor accommodation is used by the owner or occupier as their main place of residence and only let while the owner or occupier is on vacation or temporarily absent or uses no more than four bedrooms. Now, could I ask, is this a registered visitor accommodation at the moment?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it is exempt from the requirements from needing a planning permit for visitor accommodation under PD6. So if you just lease out a couple of rooms in your house or when you go on vacation, then you don't need to get a permit for that.
Yes, I understand that, but it's been stated that it is used as visitor accommodation at the moment. Is it their primary residence at the moment, or is it only used as visitor accommodation at the moment?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, as per the report, it's their primary residence. That's the statement that they provided, that it's their primary residence and they only use it when they go away.
Right. It also the covenant, which you say is really not much to do with us, will be breached if the ancillary was to be rented to a second family, but that needs to be challenged legally, and that would be a private civil matter. But if these people are already renting out part of their home as a visitor accommodation, can we not perhaps assume that they plan to do that with this second building, or have they stated that it's a granny flat for the granny? And in our permits, it must not be used for visitor accommodation. That's what we've said. So, without permission. But have they asked for permission?
Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Acting Mayor, no. The application is for an ancillary dwelling. There's no obligation for it to be a granny or other immediate relative under the requirements of the planning scheme.
But we are, one of our conditions is it must not be used for visitor accommodation without prior consent of council. Yes?
Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the
2B?
Sorry?
It's number 2B.
Yes, so without prior consent from consent of councils if it triggers a need for a permit for visitor accommodation.
And so they haven't applied for that at the moment?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. My understanding from the reading of the report before us is that it is primarily used as a primary place of residence, apart from the odd occasion when the family might not be there. I also can't find it, but there is something from an external party that had a look at the existing shed and verified that that was not being used for residential purposes. I guess that's all we can really go off. So I'm satisfied that what we have before us is the best information we can gather at this point in time, and there are those conditions attached that you reference which address potential breaches. So I'm happy with the recommendation as it is. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Briefly to my contribution, and I've got one question. I think the points that were raised by Councillor Gladright about the ambiguity with respect to the state government incentivising ancillary dwellings as opposed to, in this particular case, the private covenant disincentivising them, which I note that the report says it's not a breach of the covenant anyway, but even if it was, I think now it's largely an academic issue because, as it says in the report, that would be a private civil matter anyway. But I think the issue for me is about this notion of clustered buildings not being out of character in the neighbourhood, and it says on page 53 that it's considered that this existing dwelling, it would not be considered to have any unreasonable impact on the characteristics of the surrounding landscape or the amenity of adjoining lots. Now, of course, that's an intrinsically subjective statement, and people have every right to either agree or disagree, and indeed, as a planning authority, it's our role to interrogate whether these things stand up to the planning scheme. But my question is really about the reason why it's considered that these clustered buildings don't have unreasonable impact is because the other neighbourhood properties also have clustered buildings. And so it then says on page 55 that dwellings in close visual proximity would be considered have kind of similar sizes, 51 Bullock Drive, 59, 71, 76 and 77. But in total, once this new ancillary dwelling, if it gets approved, the proposed total gross floor area would be 516 square metres and therefore does not comply with 13.4.3A3. So my question is really, at what point do we stop? So, for example, if we agree to this one, because as it says in the report, it would only be an extra 16 square metres larger than 51, what then happens when the next one comes along and says, well, the last one got up to, you know, the smallest thing there, it should only be 365 max, but now it's gone up to, there's one that's 429, there's one 354, there's one that's 491 now.
Just to clarify the question.
So, and I'm just getting to that question, and now we're up to 516. So my question is, what is to stop councils from continuing with that logic ad infinitum until you reach the setback limits, and to continually build and build larger and larger gross floor areas?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'm happy to answer the question, but I don't know that the question is specifically relevant to this DA assessment. Perhaps it's something we can, unless the Mayor would like me to describe it more now, but it's a broader question than specifically to this application.
Okay. No, that actually satisfies me. That's fine.
I'm happy to answer it otherwise. Yeah.
That's okay. We can take that offline in an academic discussion later. For me, this proposal, as it does say in the report, does not comply with A3. The reason is that it's too big. It does note that the gross floor area of the existing dwelling is over two levels, and that, I agree, has some mitigating circumstance to it. But the fact is that, for me, you can't and shouldn't continually build larger and larger gross floor areas in areas that are not supposed to have that. That doesn't fit in with the community. It doesn't fit in with the rural living zone. Therefore, it does not comply with the planning scheme. And so I encourage people to vote against this one as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. If there are no other contributions, I will ask Councillor Fox whether you had any closing comments.
I thank everyone for their contributions. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. So we have before us DA 2021-462, Ancillary Dwelling at 72 Bullock Drive, Leslie Vale. All those in favour, say aye. Those against, have a division. Those in favour, please raise your hand. We have Councillors Woss, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Bastone and Westwood. And those against, we have Councillor Cordova. The recommendation is approved. Carried. Thank you. And with that, the Planning Authority adjourns and our open session recommences at 6:34 p.m. We move to page 83, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period, at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. So we now move to page 83 for officers' reports to council, and we have the financial report for May 2022.
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Cordova, thank you, and seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. We're looking now at the May 2022 financial report for council to review and also for the interest of the community. And this is a particularly interesting one because I feel that we are at we all know that we're facing a lot of headwinds in terms of rising interest rates and issues with inflation. But the overall, I think, theme of these two things is that, firstly, statutory fees and fines are $217,000 under budget due to revenue from planning being $245,000 under budget as a result of a reduced volume of applications and limited subdivision activity, and the recovery of legal fees of $60,000 over budget offsets that variance. So that's the one thing, is that planning fees, statutory fees and fines are going down at the moment, or at least there's been a diminution in the increase in them. And then secondly is waste. The issue of waste and transport has gone up so much that waste management costs have substantially increased, leading to a $220,000 negative variance. Plant costs of fuel and maintenance are $82,000 over budget, and water costs are $75,000 over budget. But I would say that thanks to prudent economic management, and credit to the staff and council for their efforts in this regard, that council's underlying surplus for May 2022 is $1.26 million, which is a $800,000 favourable variance on the budget for 2021 and 2022. And we also have the good news about the Tazwater dividend. It's looking like it will come in full. And I did have a question about the dot point on page 84. Disposal assets is $150,000 over budget due to the trade-in values being received for our auctioned vehicles. Am I right in thinking that can somebody please explain that to me?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through your Acting Mayor. Essentially, when our vehicles reach their used by limit, generally around 80,000 kilometres or 4 years, the vehicles get traded in, so we go through the auction process. I think, as you will be aware, the used car market is performing extremely well at the moment, and cars that previously we were getting, for example, 20,004, we're now getting around 30,004. So we've sold a number of vehicles and a number of large plant items as well. and all up around about $150,000 worth of additional revenue has been received for those.
Thank you, Mr. Bray.
Thank you. And the final question that I've got is about the contributions. It says cash is $262,000 over budget due to the contribution to public open space of $207,000 from the Spring Farm subdivision. Am I right in thinking that that's to do with the walkway, and when will that be acquitted, or, you know, what's the process with that?
Mr. Bray. Oh, Mr. Reeve?
Through your acting mayor, yeah, that's correct, and there's an allocation in next financial year to actually do the construction, so it'll be in that period of time.
Thank you, that's all.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Yeah, it's great that we get these that come to council for councillors and also for the community to have an understanding of how council is tracking, and even more so as Councillor Cordova said, in regards to you know, the increasing costs in regards to waste and fuel costs, and noting there that, as Councillor Cordova said, those things that are over budget. So it'll be great to keep on tracking that as the next 12 months go by, to really have scrutiny around how we're all travelling under these interesting economic times. The point around the local roads and community infrastructure, the 50k for the netball feasibility study. That's interesting. If we could have some more information about that, please.
Who's best placed to answer that question? I'm looking at Mr. Smee or Mr. Reeve. Mr. Smee.
Specifically in relation to the netball feasibility study, what would you like to know?
So a bit of a vague question there. So yeah, what is it? What are we? What's the intention?
So the funding was to investigate the feasibility of adding more indoor courts, ostensibly to be used by netball, but multi-courts, very much driven by the need for additional courts for netball, the growing trend to want indoor matches rather than outdoor. And so that feasibility study has been completed. It was done by Inspiring Place and was used in the lead up to the federal election to try and leverage funding for that particular project.
Great, thank you. Sorry if I missed knowing about that one. In regards to the Transform Kingston and the City deal, and I guess there's three projects really that are happening around the Kingston precinct, am I correct in regards to that? Like, there's three sort of separate projects, or is it Transform Kingston and the City deal that the funds that we're receiving? Just noting you've got a Transform Kingston, 200k. Can I just have some clarification about that? And also just on that, how I note that there is a line item in regards to that in the further budget, but I think it's really great that we've been able to track Kingston Park. Is there any way that we can have some more detailed financial reporting regard the Transform Kingston and the City deal budget?
Mr. Breen.
As a separate table, perhaps.
Yeah, through Acting Mayor, yes. Our intention is that next financial year, commencing in a couple of weeks' time, we'll have a detailed reporting for Transform Kingston. We really haven't spent much money to date in regards to Transform Kingston, so it's only now that we're starting to get ready to get the capital expenditure significantly underway, so there will be some detailed reporting from July onwards.
Thank you. So just to clarify, the City deal funding is the Transform Kingston. That's that pool of funding. Great, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Glade-Wright.
Thank you. Why does the by-election keep appearing in these monthly reports?
Mr. Breen.
Through your acting mayor. So essentially the by-election was an unbudgeted item which put us significantly over budget for our other expenditure, and will remain an over budget item until we get to the end of this month, and then we'll disappear.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up? No? Okay, so we have before us the financial report for May 2022, moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. And we now move to page 106, which is Council's Policy 3.19, Cash in Lieu of Parking Policy. Do I have a mover and a seconder for this policy, please? Give you a couple of minutes to catch up. Page 106. Moved by Councillor Cordova, thank you, and seconded by Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the cash in lieu of parking policy has some minor changes, which I think are appropriate, and this follows along from the policy was first adopted by Council in 2018. We last reviewed it in February of 2020 and we made no changes. Essentially, the policy changes are minor, and this is the idea that essentially parking is an important part of people's ability to, you know, to get to and from where they need to be, particularly when developments come about. Often it's seen to be a way that developers can save a bit of money is by not having the appropriate amounts of parking, and so this is basically a way of making sure that the council isn't left out on the lurch. So there are some minor changes which I think are reasonable. Little of the policy has been altered as it remains applicable and relevant. However, some changes have been introduced to align the policy with any long-term parking plans, precinct plans and other strategic planning or project plans. And similarly, the wording has been updated to indicate the contributions can be used for parking facilities in line with that. And it's considered that the proposed updated cash in lieu of parking policy will result in better strategic outcomes for the municipality and broader benefit for the community. So I commend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. In regards to the cash in lieu for parking, where's the budget item in that in our financial report? Like, we see the offset tree.
That's an interesting question, Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. In actual effect, on page 90 of the financial report, you'll see the list there of reserves, and there's a car parking reserve on that list.
That's what that one is. I think we've asked about that one before, so matching those two together is... I'm getting that now. Have we had... I think Councillor Bastone had a little catch-up on the weekend, and we sort of talked about sometimes we note that perhaps if businesses, different developments, don't provide enough parking, therefore the impost then is on the community, the surrounding streets, and other people are affected. Have there been decisions really where perhaps this has been available and we really should have had more parking? If we can recall anything...
Ms. Tyler Moore, are you able to help with that?
Through you, Acting Mayor, the cash in lieu policy is something that's used throughout Australia through planning permits. So generally applicants need to provide their parking on site, but it may actually be better to put consolidated parking elsewhere built by council, so council would need to make a decision around that, and this would be a contribution towards that. There are instances of developments that we allow a reduction of parking, because we agree that the parking rate is not appropriate for or not suitable for the particular development based on what the planning scheme specifies the number has to be. So this would be used in an instance where they haven't provided it, and those monetary contributions would go towards council funding car parking.
Great, thank you. So I guess, yeah, noting the deleted and the new changes really align to... different policies and strategies like the parking plan, the precinct plan, the strategic plan and things like that. If we namely think of the central Kingston area, noting that perhaps one day there could be significant parking, you know, somewhere, so therefore for local businesses to set up and not provide parking, therefore making those statements kind of gives that holistic overview of where council's heading in that direction of providing extra parking. Or, you know, it's like, I guess it kind of relates to providing a bit of a holistic overview. Is that what it means?
Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, those strategic plan, whether we had a Kingston structure plan or a parking precinct plan, then yes, that would make it clear for all stakeholders about what the parking plan for the municipality is or for certain townships such as Kingston. Or cities as Kingston, so that it would be understood what the future holds for that and perhaps better use of land, because one easy way of thinking about it is, so we don't have a sea of car parking on every site, and we're not inhibiting development on every site because we can consolidate the parking in those areas, but depending on the use and the development, it may be appropriate that they provide some or all of the parking on their own site and not rely on a central car park.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore. Councillor Fox.
I just have a question. I just recall a number of years ago when Tony Ferrier was with us, we did discuss a parking plan, a future parking plan, and a strategy relating to proposals for charging for car parking in the streets, but also providing locations where future car parks could go and the requirement for parking and what we would do with money that we got from planning approvals where we took money rather than car parking. Is that plan or strategy still current, or does anybody remember it?
I do remember it. I'll hand over to the General Manager.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, Councillor Fox, your recollection is correct, and there is a position of this council on the books that relates to the construction of the two park and rides, one at Firthside that's been completed and one at the Algona Road roundabout, which is in progress and nearing completion, and upon completion there will be a report brought back to council.
Thank you, General Manager. Councillor Bastone.
Right. Just wondering in here, what do you actually do if businesses change what they're doing? So if you have a change of use for a business that previously did not need car parking, and now with the way the business has changed, you do need car parking, what sort of follow-up is there by whoever it is within council to do something about it? And can they actually shut the business down if they don't provide either the money or the parking? That's my first question.
That might be outside the scope of this report.
No.
Are you happy to answer that one?
I'm going to answer it. Yeah.
Thank you.
So through you, Deputy Mayor, Acting Mayor, the if you have a change of use on a property and it triggers a need for a planning permit, then the planning officer must assess against all the provisions of the scheme, which includes Clause 6, which is about access and parking. That clause stipulates that hair salons must have this much, a school must have this much, and so forth. Actually, it doesn't actually include those two, but
yeah.
Different types of businesses. And so they need a planning permit. If they're not providing, unable to provide the car parking on the site, so not provide all of it, then they need to get a planning permit specifically for that, for the reduction or waiver of car parking. So if a business is operating and didn't get the permits that it needed, it's in breach, we would do planning compliance. If the operation goes from same to same, so from cafe to cafe, it doesn't need a planning permit, so we wouldn't address the car parking because we would have already addressed it previously. It can be complicated with uses that have existing use rights, very old businesses that operate, but if they're going to intensify or grow that business, then they need to supply the car parking stipulated by the planning scheme.
Thank you. And my next question is this only for businesses, this parking policy, or could a developer use this to build perhaps townhouses with inadequate parking and pay for parking on the street for those townhouses, for instance?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, no, we wouldn't support the use of the policy for residential uses because it's not the nature of a public car park to use for private parking.
A question from Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Two questions, Acting Mayor. The first question is, it looks like we have about $46,000 in the bank from parking. What's the most that it's ever been, and are we waiting for a certain threshold before we invest in particular parking? Are we waiting for it to get to $1 million or $500,000? So what's the most it's ever been, and what are we waiting for to spend that $46,000?
Mr. Breen, are you able to answer that? I haven't seen it change much during my time on council. Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through Acting Mayor, there's over the past there's only been a few applications where a requirement for parking has been required through a planning permit, and that was under previous planning schemes, and I know that certainly one of them hasn't been paid to date, but they haven't finished their development. There were very few before that. This parking cash and lieu policy only came in 2018, so before that we didn't have the policy. Since we've had the policy, unfortunately, we haven't had any contributions. We did put a planning permit condition on, which came through the chamber, that they either had to provide the parking spaces on site or they had to make the contribution. And they ended up fitting the car parking spaces on site. Essentially, they didn't want to start with. But another permit has been issued in recent times for something similar. And we're yet to see what action they're going to take, what decision they'll make. And it just really comes down to we've had very limited development within the Kingston CBD.
Thank you. Now, my second question, if you'll indulge me, Acting Mayor, is purposed in order to achieve greater return to council, which I know we're all very interested in seeing greater revenue for council. So if we cast our eyes to the amount of cash in lieu of car parking contribution from 5.33 through 5.34, and then 5.35 is the one I want to interrogate. Basically, we say that a car park is 30 square metres and they need to build that, and then you value the land and that's how you get to the figure. But then at 5.35, the total of the construction cost and the land value is then reduced by a public benefit factor of 25%. This acknowledges the likelihood of public parking being shared across different sites and at different times. My question is that tantamount to a 25% blanket discount? And were we to amend this right now, and I know that I can't do it because I moved the motion, but if we were to amend to strike 5.35, wouldn't future people, developers, actually have to pay the full cost of the construction rather than getting an arbitrary 25% discount?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the application of 5.35 existed in the very first policy that came to council in 2018, and I don't have the report before me as to the thinking behind that, so I couldn't give you the grounds for it. Your interpretation is it effectively a 25% discount. My reading and interpretation of the policy is that yes, it would be.
So my next question is, through you, Acting Mayor, is there an appetite among this council to, as we always talk about headworks charges and developers paying their fair share, is there an appetite from this council to amend this to strike 5.35 when, you know, very few people use this policy? When they do, I posit that they should pay what it costs to build parking and not get an arbitrary, you know, where this 25% figure came from, nobody remembers, nobody knows. I think developers can afford to pay what it costs to build the parking. They were going to build it at their property anyway. And so why shouldn't they just pay the cost of the parking is my question. So, who would like to move an amendment to strike 5.35? If only I could do it.
Well, you're right that you can't do that because you did move the policy. I wouldn't be inclined to do that because it feels a little bit like policy on the run. I'd need more information and advice. But obviously anyone around the table can do that if they see fit. Councillor Gladreich.
Can we ask for some more advice around that, please?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, Councillor Gladreich, my advice would be that if there was any semblance of an appetite around the table, that it would be more appropriate to move to defer this item so that council officers could provide that feedback prior to council considering this report.
I'm happy to move to defer then.
Move to defer. We have a motion to defer before us, moved by Councillor Gladreich, second by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hands. We have Councillors Midgley, Gladreich, Cordova, Bastone and Westwood. Those against, Councillor Woss and Fox. The motion is that the matter be deferred, and that is carried. Thank you, General Manager. I didn't get to ask my question. It's a good question. Okay. So deferral of the cash in lieu of parking policy, that moves us to page 119, the Development Services Quarterly Report. Do I have a mover and a seconder for that, please? Moved by Councillor Gladright with your lights still on? No.
I'll move it. Sorry, I saw your light on, so I thought you
moved
were moving
by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova. Thank you, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I keep saying Acting Mayor, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, Acting Chair.
All of the above. Perfectly fine.
So this report really provides the update on the great work of the Development Services Quarterly Report. I think it's the most topical conversations when you're out shopping about planning matters. And everywhere we go, it seems, in all council areas. So it gives a provision and understanding of applicant lodgement numbers, the TAS planning scheme and public consultation, so it's great to see an update in regards to that. TAS planning reform, consultation regarding the new Aboriginal cultural heritage, customer inquiries and planning appeal updates. I have a couple of questions. One of them that's not noted in here, but I hope that's okay to ask through the chair, just in regards to the Greater Hobart Plan, noting that councillors did have a submission in regards to this, and that's an interesting one where it doesn't really fall under the, won't be a statutory part of the planning, but yet it does have some impact. And I guess when we have planning matters come to us, they can note to the Greater Hobart Planning plan. So noting that councils had an initial workshop regarding this, just wondering, and we did make comment around some areas of interest, just will a final submission come before councillors, or what's the process regarding that?
Ms. Tyler Moore, are you able to answer this one?
Through you, Acting Mayor, the information has been put together for a background report for the General Manager to prepare the response on behalf of Kingborough Council.
Thank you. Thank you. Another question in regards to the state planning provisions and the five-year review. So noting in the report that's the planning reform going out for community consultation. If you could just have some more information in regards to that one. Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it was legislated that within 5 years they had to review the SPPs. I believe they anticipated we would all have our schemes and we'll be operating on it by then, which obviously we're not. At half the councils on the new planning scheme, but they're doing the review anyway, which we support because we don't want it delayed. It's just a scoping time at this moment to see how they're going to do it. And in fact, the state government is presenting an information session which is available to the general public, albeit with a fee, through PIA, the Planning Institute of Australia, if any member of the public or councillors would like to watch along. Legat is also holding an information session about it because it's actually an enormous amount of information to digest and to get through for the review. So on behalf of Kingborough, Development Services will prepare a response to that review, noting that we're not on the new planning scheme, so it's a little bit more difficult if you're not in practice to what's working or not working, but we continue to work closely with our colleagues from other councils to understand some of the elements and also the changes that were brought through in IPD4, which then became PD8, which changed the exemptions at the front of the scheme and took away the 4 metre rear setback in certain zones. All those elements, they're part of the SPPs, so we certainly have practice to be able to provide comment back to the state government about that review.
Thank you. So in simple terms, so it's too big really for the community to unpack and understand. Is that what I'm getting, Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through Acting Mayor, there's some planning enthusiasts in our community, so I'm sure that they will...
Sorry, not all, yep. Maybe me even.
Yes, I'm sure they'll wholeheartedly have review and have certainly kept up to date, which is commendable because it is quite big and they don't necessarily work in the field. For the general public, they are more than welcome to put contributions in through to the state government, but it's to the state government, not to us. If members of the public wish to ask questions or understand elements or the overall review, then we're open and happy to provide any assistance to members of the public. and all these submissions will be visible on the state government website that different councils and members of the public or other stakeholders will provide.
Thank you. So is there any kind of concerns or anything, any flag things that the public really need to be made aware of in regards to this? Just noting some commentary people might have seen on like social media, just, you know, that things are going to change and they don't know about them. Are people actually aware of the heads up in actually what it will be and any impacts that it might have on them?
Happy to answer that.
Through Acting Mayor, I wouldn't want to feed ideas of what residents should or shouldn't think is appropriate. It's up for them because the state government's written it. It did go up for consultation many years ago, but obviously a lot to digest. We do get inquiries from members of the public who are interested in the incoming planning scheme because it's part of the LPS, so it sort of all fits in and builds in. So we have had a lot of inquiries from members of the public, but it tends to be more people that are wanting to subdivide their own land. What can they do on their property? So we do that consistently. When we go to the LPS advertising, which we're hoping is going to be before the end of the year, but we're waiting for direction from the state government to do that, we would have that ability to feed into that, but the SPP scoping will occur before then. So we would probably just encourage residents, if they want an understanding, to either watch that PEA presentation, and we can provide the link. That's not a problem. I think we might have pushed it in our social media. So they can do that, or they can come and ask council, or they can ask the state government directly.
Thank you. At the KBAC meeting on Friday, there was discussion of this, and it was noted that, and I think I'm referring to the right thing on page 337, there is a table regarding the requirements for bicycle parking, noting that the scheme has a lack of minimum bicycle parking requirements for apartment blocks, and that the committee saw this as a really big problem, that it's inadequate. It's an adequate end-of-trip facilities for new and commercial buildings. I'm quite sure the new development for the Royal Hobart Hospital, the staff there really had to fight for adequate bicycle parking, and even some of the staff are having to park in an empty room because there isn't adequate end-of-trip facilities. So I guess in regards to matters like that, I guess, is that an individual contribution? Can council include in their submission that, you know, we believe that providing secure undercover bike parking would help people more people ride for transport. Can we include anything like that, or would that have to go through a motion?
If Ms. Tyler Moore is happy to answer, you're welcome to do so. Yep. We are getting a bit off topic of the quarterly report that we do have in front of us.
Okay, thank you.
I'm happy to answer it. Yes, we can. I don't know the outcome at this point of what contribution would make on that, but I would encourage community groups such as KBAC or other community groups that have a specialised interest to just write on their area of interest. They don't have to do the whole lot. They can just do their bit, and I'd encourage them to do that contribution because contributions from the public is really important.
Great, thank you. And just one more point relating to perhaps something that could be included in the future quarterly reports is when I first started at council, we used to have a listing of different approvals for planning permits, and I think we asked too many questions about them, and there was often the temporary Airbnb type dwellings and things that were there, and now I guess as councillors we don't really have any kind of scrutiny or understanding around how much permission is given in regards to sort of temporary accommodation or Airbnb and things like that. Could that table maybe be included in a quarterly report? Or
is that the one that came out in the newsletter that Ms. Norton sent? No?
It was it used to come to us at the front before development applications, and then it went to the back and then it disappeared.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the councillors were asked about whether it still needed to stay in the council agenda. Was it serving a purpose? Because the decisions were already made. This is a quarterly report, so that would add a phenomenal number of pages to the report. If it was to be added, perhaps it could be something we could just discuss further about how that information could be presented.
Thank you. Thank you for that recollection, and thanks for the report and all the work that goes into it.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Glade-Wright.
Thank you. I hope I'm not getting off topic, so just pull me up if I am. But I'm just trying to get my head around the SPPs versus the LPS. So the SPPs are currently out for public consultation, but the LPS isn't. Is that right?
Ms. Tyler-Moore?
Through you, Acting Mayor, the SPPs are the overall parts of the plan, is essentially the planning scheme when it goes to the Tasmanian planning scheme. The LPS is simply the parts of our municipality that we choose to apply the zonings and the code overlays to. So we're still bound by the Tasmanian planning scheme. We're all the same in Tasmania. And the LPS, in terms of Kingborough, decided to make this part commercial, this part rural, this part residential, sort of like colouring it in. That is up to us, and that's not gone out for consultation yet because we still are in drafts phase with the TPC.
But those LPS will in future come out for consultation.
Yes.
Okay, that's all I was wanting to check. So if I was a concerned resident about planning matters, now would be the time to be giving the feedback for the SPPs rather than waiting for the LPS.
Ms. Tyler-Moore?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, if a person is interested in planning and wants to make comments about things that are in the planning scheme, such as overall building heights or setbacks, parking provisions, bicycle provisions, then the SPPs is the place to do that. Mm-hmm. If they're concerned about that we're going to make, which we're not going to, Kingston Main Street industrial, then that's the LPS. So when it's specific to Kingborough, it's LPS. Overall planning controls, which does affect us, is SPPs.
Okay, so then I just wanted to check then, because I think you mentioned it going out on socials, but I asked that the other day. Can I just clarify whether this will be going out on socials or not?
Ms. Tyler-Moore?
Through you, Mayor. No, sorry, I did make a mistake. It didn't go through socials, and it is on the state government website. We just need to be mindful to not confuse the public too much with the different consultations we're doing and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, we have before us the Development Services. Oh, sorry, Councillor Loss. Didn't see your light. Councillor Loss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to make a couple of observations. On page 120, the chart there with planning permit applications. And certainly we live in interesting times, and note that May has been the month where it's turned the corner each and every year. We're still down this year compared with other years, but it'll be interesting to see the remainder of the year with June and July and what happens after that. Also, under the planning appeal updates, I'm just wondering whether there is something that we can learn by these planning appeal updates. The first one on page 123, the decision was varied. On the second one, the decision varied. On the third one, we're okay. On the fourth one, planning permit will be amended. On Old Burnies Road, some requests were struck out. In relation to James Avenue, the permit will be issued when the direction is received from the tribunal. In relation to Browns Road, the same. Likewise, Mackenzie's Road. And I'm just wondering whether we are seeking more information than we need to. And as I said, is there something we can learn from that? I'm not criticising, I'm just asking whether we can learn.
Ms. Tyler-Moore, are there any learnings from the things read out by Councillor Wass?
Through you, Acting Mayor, there, the question about what we ask for, there was only one appeal against the request for extension of time, and that was 398 Old Burnies Road. An email has been sent to the councillors with the details about that and how that was dealt with. With the other ones, consent agreements, then they're working with the applicants on some of those conditions. So they all vary, but certainly there's learnings that can be taken from it about having trying to fit in before the 42 days expires discussions about some of those planning permit conditions and how the applicant may respond to those. So that's something we're trying to do more proactively. And the terminology in there about direction to issue the permit by the tribunal is just a clerical requirement that they just have to give us the direction, even though it's a permit that was going to be issued anyway.
Thank you, Councillor Woss, and thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore, for answering all of our questions. We have before us the Development Services Quarterly Report. Oh, Councillor Midgley, I should check if you'd like to sum up. No? Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova, that the report be noted. All those in favour? Those against? Carried unanimously. We now move to page 126, notices of motion. There are no notices of motion that have been received. Confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Can I have a mover and a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Fox, and seconded by Councillor Gladewright. That in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed sessions to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and tender, milling, filling and placement of asphalt and bitumen spray seals. All those in favour? Those against? That is carried. Thank you. So in accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease, and the open session of a council is adjourned at 7:14.